We are starting our dating series for 5, 7, 6, 9. And this year's dating series is going to be different, I hope, than all the previous years. Just like our Binyan HaBayit has taken on a different tone. Previous years I always began by saying that I only have experience with Merkaz HaRav and with people who come from Orthodox backgrounds, and I'll try to modify it for what's right for Machon Meir, but you're welcome to speak to other people. I will begin with the same clause that you're welcome to speak to other people. I always recommend you hear other vantage points. This is the way I see it, but that doesn't mean it's right. We're not talking halacha here, we're talking practical advice. So on that point, I stick to my guns. You're welcome to speak to other people, and you don't have to buy anything I'm telling you. I'm telling it to you the way I understand it, and I always try to explain why I'm saying what I'm saying so that you could gauge it and think about when and how to apply it. I'm not telling you any EGBGs here. I'm saying logic, and I'll try to explain everything I'm saying. But the point where I'm hoping this year our learning is going to be different than previous years is that quite a few years have passed since our first class in the dating series, and a few hundred students have passed through the walls of Machon Meir's English department, and I have had the good fortune of accompanying tens if not hundreds of students through the dating process, through marriage, into marriage, and into the beginning stages of marriage. And so our class is going to be the product of that experience, which I felt sorely lacking the previous times I gave the class. Even after these years of experience, I still feel sorely lacking, and your input is welcome. Sometimes I use terms which people afterwards let me know that in today's slang, those terms are misused or misappropriated. So I have to know that. Our class and our discussion is going to be focused on dating for someone who's either chozer b'tshuva or a ger, and in the Dati Lumi crowd, namely Machon Meir. Anyone else that wants to listen to these classes, we're going to make them available online, but they may be way off target. Our conversations and the topics that we will cover are focused to what you guys need, being that there are many of you guys out there. That's why it's worth putting online. But there's a marked difference between the expectations and the attitudes of someone who has a rich background, if we'll call it that. There's a marked difference between that and someone who's grown up from birth and he's basically gone down a very straight path throughout his life. And our studies are going to try to focus on the colorful pasts and the beautiful futures that we hope to build. So with that introduction, let's begin. The reason I asked you all to have paper and pen is because there are a few questions which I want you to ask yourselves. And I don't want to collect these papers. I want you to think. And the first question I think every person has to ask themselves is, why am I dating? Right? When we're going to start to date, one of the questions is, well, why am I doing this, right? If I want to get the most out of it, then I have to know what my purpose is. Now, maybe we'll take a minute for people to think about the answer to that. When people are still at a stage that they're dating for a girlfriend, so that's one stage in life. The halacha expects that when we date, it's for the purpose of marriage. A person is evolving, and when a person comes into Machon Meir, he's coming from a world where he spent many days and many evenings with people of the opposite gender. Life was filled with men and women together, and suddenly you're in Machon Meir where it's all men, and they talk to you about contact with the opposite gender being for the sake of marriage, and that seems difficult. It is. No one's saying it isn't. When you're used to life differently, then that's difficult. Why am I discussing this now? Because what usually happens is that guys come into Machon Meir and they say, where are the girls? So they tell him there's an institution around the corner called Machon Orah. So they tell the guy, so the guy is asking, when do we get together? And they say, when it's dating, when it's time to date. So the guys say, okay, when can we start dating? We say, when you're ready for it. And the guy says, I'm ready. So the first point that we have to discuss is, when are we really ready to date? And that revolves around the question of, why am I dating? So if the reason I want to date is because I want to have a girl in my life, so then I have to know that I'm very normal. Chazal said, a person who reaches the age of 18, 19, and doesn't get married, spends every day of his life in sin. Chazal say it is an impossibility that a person will cross that threshold and have a day where he doesn't have an improper thought. Every person, if he's normal, after he crosses that age, so every day he's going to have points in his day when his mind wanders, what the Gemara calls hirhure aveira. The Gemara says a person doesn't pass a day without erring in that realm of halacha. That doesn't mean it's right. That means something we have to work on, but we have to recognize that it's normal. But that doesn't mean we should go and get married tomorrow. It just means that it's very normal that we're going to want to get married tomorrow, or at least we're going to want to have contact with people of the opposite gender, and that's normal. On the other hand, let me take you to a conversation I had. A girl calls up, and I will make up a name because I don't remember her name. We'll call her Natalie Okinawa. So I say, okay, Miss Okinawa. She says, yeah, I heard that you set people up. So I said, we tried. And she says, I was wondering if you could set us up, set me up. So I said, okay, we'll have to write out, I have a bunch of questions, it'll take about a half hour. Do you want to do that now? She says, yeah, okay. After we spend about 15 minutes and all kinds of other things, I ask her, and is there any other information I need to know? Your past, are you religious from birth? Are you a gay? Are there any health issues in your family? Is there any other information I need to know? So she says, I am a gay. Why is that important? So I said, well, it's not so important, but how long ago did you become a gay? So she says, 3 months ago. So I say, okay, and where were you before that? So she says, why is that important? So I say, it's not so important, but I'd like to know if it's important. So she says, a half a year ago I was an atheist, and a year ago I was still in school studying to be a nun. So I said, oh wait, so a year ago you were studying to be a nun, and a half a year ago you were an atheist, and somehow 3 months ago you became a ger? So she says, yeah, but I'm Jewish. This is the way for life. I said, I respect what you're saying. I hear that. But what would you have told me a year ago was the way for life? So she says, well, Christianity. I was a devout Christian then. So I said, don't you think that if you've just been a ger for 3 months, we should wait a little bit before you start dating? So she says, are you questioning how devout I am in my Judaism? I said, no, I'm not questioning it. I'm just saying that if you've made such a change in your life, wouldn't it make more sense to study a little bit more, spend a little bit more time becoming acquainted with what Judaism is all about and what Jewish guys are like, etc., and what building a Jewish home is like? And she says, no. So I said, okay. You know, my job isn't to tell people what to do. But maybe here in Machon Meir, my job is a little bit to think with you about what you should do. So everyone who looks at someone else could see that what they're doing might not be such a good idea. But somehow, when every person looks at themselves, they feel like they're balanced. The first thing we always discuss is that dating has to be out of equilibrium. And I realized that as much as I say it, no one understands what I'm talking about. That seems a pretty obvious point, right? If you view life as a pendulum, well, if 6 months ago a person wasn't keeping Shabbos and he wasn't keeping Kashrut and he wasn't doing anything Jewish, I mean, he was Jewish, but he wasn't keeping anything, and now 6 months later he's keeping everything, so that's admirable, but a person has to give time for the pendulum to stop swinging. And we're going to discuss how does a person know where he's at? But the first point which we will Be'ezrat Hashem discuss, and that's the first point a person has to think about when he's approaching dating, is where am I? How balanced am I? And this is one of the examples of a point which previous times we spoke about for 5 minutes, and after seeing that I was talking to the wall, I decided that we have to spend much more time on it. I spoke to a guy and he told me he wants to be dating, so I said, wait, over the last 2 years you had months where you kept Shabbos and months where you didn't keep Shabbos and months where you kept Shabbos and months where you didn't keep Shabbos. So right now, where are you holding? So he said, the last two Shabbos I've been keeping. So I said, that's great. It's not funny. It's not easy. I admire the person. It's not easy. So I told him, well, what kind of home do you want to build? So he said, for sure we're going to keep Shabbos in my home. And I said, okay, but if you're keeping two Shabbatot and you didn't keep before that, so don't you need more time to become settled in keeping Shabbat? So he said a very interesting line. He said, you know, you just see that I kept and I didn't keep and I kept and I didn't keep. But when I look at my life, I see a very steady graph. I see a very steady, the points all connect. I said, yeah, life always connects. It's not like you were dead in between, but every graph's connected. So he said, no, it's going in a very steady direction. I'm always going up. It zigzags, but I'm always going up. So I respect that. But that also gave me an insight as to why, whenever I say date out of equilibrium, I'm saying one thing and no one's understanding me. So it's like this time, Be'ezrat Hashem, we'll spend a little bit more time on that. But what I want to do now is take a minute and go over all the points I want us to discuss. We have very little time considering. I mean, we're holding the middle of Sivan. So we'll have 2 weeks in Sivan and 4 weeks in Tammuz. I want to finish by the end of the semester. So that gives us 6 classes, basically. Maybe 7. That's the amount of classes we have. Next year, next semester, we'll see what we'll start with. But being that we have very little time, we're going to try to cover, and we'll go over the points quickly, and you guys are welcome to tell me what other points you want us to cover. We'll go around the room. My goal is to cover A, when to start dating, B, how does one get dates, dealing with shadchanim, which is a story in and unto itself, the internet, if one sees a girl at a simcha or something that one thinks one would be interested in dating, how does one move forward on that. Once one is set up with a girl, how do you check out if it's a girl that makes sense dating? Your own reputation, how to ensure that you don't ruin your reputation. Your past, what should a person divulge? When should a person divulge it? The first phone conversation, setting up the first date, different pointers on how to do it, where to do it, location, time, cost, preparations for a date, conversations on the first date, how to end the date, the phone call after the date, when to call, what to discuss, how to continue a relationship, how to end the relationship, when do I know if she's Mrs. Right, how do I know if she's Mrs. Right. I don't know if we'll get to discuss engagement, etc. That maybe we'll leave for a different time. That's in a nutshell, and maybe we'll go around the room. And we'll see what points you guys want to discuss. It would be nice to discuss dealing with parents and things like that. I'm not sure if we'll get to that here, but let's see what you guys have in mind. So we'll go around the room and each of you can tell me what points you would want us to discuss, and then we'll see what we could get to. Michael?
I can't say your name.
Yeah, remind me your name.
Yes, sir.
Yes.
What do you think are reasonable deal breakers on her side and reasonable deal breakers on your own end, or is that just all subjective?
Oh no, we'll discuss that, Be'ezrat Hashem. It's not all subjective. It's one of the points we have to discuss at length. Why would you end a relationship? Why end and why continue? Yeah, that was a given by me, but you're right, I didn't mention that.
And my other question is I know, I mean, it almost sounds voyeuristic asking a girl, like, what were your previous relationships like? Or, you know, what kind of guys did you date in the past? But are those questions acceptable? Just to kind of like gain introspection into why those things failed, or maybe some red flags that might come up later on, and why your other relationships failed, or should you not go that route? When the relationship gets further along, I'm talking about.
So we'll discuss that. I wrote it down. We'll discuss it when we discuss our own past. we'll discuss discussing her past. What else? Yosef, anything else?
Oh, and then my last point is, what specific mitos do you really want to work on or focus on before you go into dating? That's my last question. And what mitos do you want to look for in her, too? Or which mito kind of match up? Like, how do you find that, you know, that your bishar? Like, which qualities do you want to look for in bishar in yourself and them that will connect you, like a magnet, I guess? Do you want to look for something that's somewhat opposite? Do you want to look for familiarity? Like, what do you, you know, what's best to pursue?
Excellent. Okay, that's what I meant in knowing who is Mrs. Wright, but it's a better way of wording it. Your way is better, so I wrote it down. Yeah.
I realized the question I
wanted. Yeah.
I guess some of us have more interesting pasts than the other.
Right.
So some of us, before we were religious, didn't really talk to girls then either. So some of us, maybe I'm the only one, but maybe some of us need to be taught not just from the religious aspect. I had an interesting experience, but then in the end, I talked to a rabbi, and he does marital counseling. He told me about women in general. I'm like, wow, I didn't know it. I didn't know that talk about women, not religious or not, just about women.
Okay. How to talk to the opposite gender. Yeah. What else?
Yeah.
Actually, I think this is an extension of applying, like certain things that are very sensitive to a person. I think it's like sexual history and even like mental health issues, perhaps. Like, how do we go about finding that information while at the same time not embarrassing the person or trying to reduce, you know, as much as possible?
It's all in your family.
There's something about marriage.
Make sure to find out if she's carrying the paycheck.
Yeah,
okay. What else? Anything else, Nathan? Okay. Ashachaim? Simcha? Fensua? Yehuda? Baruch, Simcha, any questions you want to ask?
I have one thing I noticed when I first started becoming involved with Yuba a while back. Everyone was saying you should date and marry another Baal Tshuva. I think this is ridiculous because that means there'll be two people. Let's say we have a home event. This is kind of post-date. Let's say none of us will have been raised in a firm home. Yeah, we're going to try to have one. Right. So,
very good question.
You know, wouldn't it be a good idea for someone from originally not an Orthodox background to try to find someone? I guess there's maybe a fear on one end that you'll drag this other person down. I'm looking at it more in terms of, you know, like, oh, if I'm going to maybe slip up, keep a job, oh, I want to sneak a peek at the TV, I'll have my wife there from the real deal background. Well, they'll embrace all that. So would it be a good idea to have?
Okay, so I'll tell you, I think that's an excellent point. We've discussed that in the past, and we will discuss that Bezrat Hashem. What I'm sensing also is that we'll have to add at least one, if not two, Thursday nights where you guys could just ask questions, we could have discussions on a point-by-point basis. Because some days deserve a longer time than others. The way we did our dating series in the past is we took a Thursday night, and we started at 6:30 at night and ended at 2:30 in the morning. We just had a marathon. Instead of taking every Sunday, we just did one after the other, and it has its pluses, it has its minuses. I'm thinking maybe we should do that again. Yeah, friends.
What about the parents? Because sometimes the two of them connect so well. And then in the end, you know, you get sometimes parents that he's a convert, but you are, you get it. And sometimes convert parents, they think, like, it's not the one for you, you must marry this one.
Okay, I wrote it down. Simcha, was there anything else?
Not on hand that I can think of. Maybe someone comes.
Okay, Noah?
Rabbi, age difference, too, which should be important.
Yeah.
Like somebody,
okay.
30, I don't think I should be dating somebody who's 18. Right. That's proper, you know.
I'm 25. I'm already kind of old by certain Orthodox.
Oh, beauty, yeah.
Okay.
You're old.
Right. Grandpa. I'm your grandkid. Like, I can remember when I went to a Kabbalah house once, I was maybe 23, 24 at the time.
Remember thinking, oh, you're thinking about, like, you could be thinking about getting married. Like, I can't even read Hebrew yet. And, you know, it's easy for him to say that. You know, it's not like he's introducing me to his daughters that he started having when he was 22. So,
okay, we'll get to that position.
How to deal with if you were already 3 years in a relationship and living together? This is a big thing because some of us who became kayer was in this thing.
Right.
And
so that I'm writing down. But I think maybe that we should leave for the class where you could ask your own questions.
Okay.
But I'm writing it down. We'll see if we get to it. We'll see how much time we have.
What was that question?
Dealing with past relationships.
I have a question. How do you know if like, a relationship is kind of dragging? It's comfortable.
It's in danger of collapsing.
Danger of collapsing. Now, sometimes
maybe we can incorporate some
of the
wrestler
pamphlet that ran
off.
Okay.
Go and take it for yourself.
Yeah. Baruch.
Me?
Yeah.
I think that what Michael said, I think is something that seriously needs to be worked on. I think that there's a serious problem with people who are going out on 25, 30 dates. And but not learning from any of the dates, they never get past 17. I think it's a serious issue.
Okay. Yitzhak? Nothing? Yeah?
I wanted to know how much time and energy would you put into looking for a shirt. I know some people that when they talk to X amount of Shabbat Benim and whenever they go over to Shabbat, they're speaking to their friends' wives, they're speaking to their small friend, and there's just some person they meet, they're like, putting themselves out there trying to shut up.
Okay. Anything else? Okay. We'll see. Yeah? Anything? No. Okay. So, let's begin. Rav Aryeh Kaplan wrote a few excellent books. Unfortunately, he died young. In one of his books, he tries to explain what is the neshama. And he goes into a very interesting question. What am I? How do you define yourself? If they're going to be able to take your brain and transplant it to someone else, are you that person? What defines who we are? Our thoughts, our emotions? What defines our identity? And that's something to think about. When it comes to dating, so I like to say that there are a few things that we have to think about, and that is what is important to me. Now, I'll tell you guys a tip. Whenever you ask open-ended questions, it's good to give a number, right, to define them. So for those of you having a piece of paper, let's give a number. What are the 5 points that are most important to you? What 5 things are most important to you? No, in life. What 5 things? We want to define who we are. So what 5 things are most important to us in life? I think we'll move forward and this we'll leave for homework. The next question I think a person has to ask himself is, what are my priorities? What's important to me in life? And we'll get back to these questions with regard to the girl we're dating and do we match or don't we match. But the reason I'm bringing up these questions now is because when we discuss dating out of equilibrium, I have to land, so I think that we have to give more accurate formulas. And the formulas that I would think to give is, firstly, when you answer these two questions, has the answer changed in the last 2 years? And have you been in the same place? What's important to you in life? Has that changed in the last 2 years? The way you identify yourself. My feeling is that in the average case, a person needs a minimum of 2 years where he's been at the same place, the same place as in what's important to him, the way he's lived his life, religious, non-religious. Now you could argue with me, you could say after a year that a person's been steady on all of these, it's okay. I don't see any reason to rush. If you were girls, the story would be different. But if you're a guy, there are a lot of girls out there. No one's saying it's easy to find the right one. But the age isn't the factor that makes it difficult. And it's far more difficult to enter a marriage when a person is out of flux, when a person is not in equilibrium. And then to try and play catch-up from within the relationship. And then you don't know what confusion stems from the relationship and what confusion stems from the fact that I don't begin to know who I am. That's far more difficult. So I'd rather err on the side of caution. And my recommendation would be that a person take 2 years where he's at the same place. That doesn't mean he isn't growing. That doesn't mean that a person doesn't have growth and that now he's spending more time learning Gemara. Now he's spending he's more careful on how he makes a blessing. He's more careful to make minyan 3 times a day. No, we will continue growing. But when I define myself, who am I? What's important to me? What are my priorities? Where do I want to get to in life? That's the third question. What are my aspirations? Well, if I want to consider myself in equilibrium, then I think it's logical to say that I have to have been consistent in that for the last 2 years. And believe me, that's not always enough. But it's a start. Yeah, Yosef.
In America, like, the nature of how we live in Canada is that you go to college, even if you are fairly conservative, you go to college and then you're probably going to work 2 or 3 different jobs. So in your 20s, you're going to have a lot of flux. Your lifestyle, and no matter if you're observant or not observant, you're going to be moving around a lot. And so, I mean, I know very few people who, you know, after college stayed in the same place for 2 years before, you know, just
set.
So, like, how do you address that for you know, your average American, I guess?
I'm happy you asked that, because I don't think that a change of job is a reason to call a person out of flux. Meaning, a person could be jobless, he could work as an architect, as a mechanical engineer, as a businessman, as a garbage collector. That doesn't change who he is. It might change his ego a little bit, it might change his income a little bit, but that doesn't change who he is. We're talking about changes that are essential to a person's being. I don't care if a person one day wears sandals and another day wears Dockers, or whatever you call those, Crocs, right? That doesn't matter to me. By the same token, it doesn't matter to me what job he has. It doesn't matter to me if he has a longer hair or shorter hair. It might make a difference if he has a ponytail or he shaves his head. That might indicate a slight difference. But again, it's indicating something else that changed. What I'm talking about is something more internal. Who am I? And again, within observance, if I have consistent growth, that's normal. That's fine. But if I'm fluctuating from keeping Shabbos to not keeping Shabbos, or from having no concept of what it means to be a Jew to having concept and trying to be observant, then I have to recognize that I've made a huge change in my life. A change that's going to affect every facet of my life. Which girl I marry, what our aspirations are, what kind of home we'll build, what community we'll live in, that affects everything. What kind of job I have, okay. It doesn't come close to the impact of being religious or not religious.
So as you're looking at how fast the person moved up, they can go down just as fast. They went up too quickly. That's basically what you're saying.
I'm not saying that necessarily. I'm saying we have to be prepared for downs. When people ask me if they're ready to date, one of the things I'm always curious to know is how many downs have you had? I understand you've had ups, but part of growth is going down too. Meaning a person says, I'm going to move forward. Okay, how many times did you have that suddenly you didn't have strength to wake up in the morning for Shacharis? How many times did you have that you walked into Shabbos and you felt like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to keep Shabbos. And then did you keep Shabbos? My question is, what happens when you hit it down? Because if your life's been up and up and up, great. What happens when it's not up and up? What happens when you hit Shabbos and you don't feel like keeping Shabbos? Now, if you're born religious and you're used to keeping Shabbos and it's in your blood, so you don't think twice, I'm keeping Shabbos. You might not like it. You might go to shul and be half out of it. But at the end of the day, you're going to be consistent. But if a person's coming from a background where he wasn't keeping Shabbos, so then it's much harder on him. Like Chazal tell us, Chazal say about a ger. Chazal say, when a person's a ger, Chazal tells us about the greatest gerim in Jewish history, from Yonasan ben Uzi, from Unklos Hager to Akilas Hager, maybe they were one and the same, or to Rus, Chazal tell us it wasn't easy for them. It wasn't. Rus is amazing. Onkelos Chazal tell us he had times when he contemplated going back. And Chazal tells some stories there of Gerim that went back. They're not allowed to. It's not right. But you know what? It's not easy. When I'm accustomed to life one way and then I switch to a different way. So the theory is very strong. It takes a tremendous person like Rus to be with new invigoration and enthusiasm every morning. Most of us are not that way. The Medrash says there is one enemy that's always strong, and that is the Yetzer Hara, the Medrash says. Every morning the Yetzer Hara wakes up with new vigor, and we pray for strength to stand up to him. So when I gauge, when a person asks me if he's ready to date, one of the things that I think a person should ask himself is, how many downs did I have, and how far down did I go when I was down? Because every time I contend with a time when I'm down, and I'm still consistent, now I've strengthened my observance. And then I can have more confidence that in the tough times of life, I'll stick to my guns. No one could be confident. Don't get me wrong. Chazal tell us, there was a Kohen Gadol who was observant for years, and at the end of his life, he switched. He became a Sadducee. He left the tradition. Happened to the best of people. Just because a person was born Orthodox doesn't mean it won't happen. But at the end of the day, it's much tougher on someone who's lived life differently. And when a person makes that change, I think he has to give himself quite a lot of time before he goes to this tremendously beautiful concept of marriage. And that's why having a job, not having a job, and which type of job, it's not the same. I'm still living the same life, I'm waking up the same way, I'm doing the same thing.
So it's less of an issue, it's more of, did you keep Shabbos, did you keep kosher, did you dog when you didn't feel like doing it at times?
That's an example.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Don't catch the example. I'm saying that's an example. No, the idea is, am I balanced? One indicator as to whether I've hit equilibrium, whether I can rest assured that I'm balanced, is that. That's an indicator. That's not the key. The concept is the key. The concept of equilibrium. You with me? Just a second. Baruch Hu on Sunday. Simcha. Sorry.
Okay, so, you know, I think that's something Noah said before about the age issue. Now, if we relate that to our own personal growth in Torah, I'm sure that entails a certain degree of also, maturation. Like, okay, not only am I getting older, I'm getting older as I'm learning Torah. I'm growing on multiple levels, and they influence one another. So that, someone can be very mature without being well versed in Torah or what have you.
Right.
And
but
someone can be immature anyway. Now, if you're, I'm sure most of us are going to probably be maybe in our late 20s by the time we really started. Before we really hit the level of being able to say, I consider myself really a fully formed Jew, presumably at that point we'll have reached a level of maturity, several levels of maturity on different fronts. Now there could be someone, where the age issue comes in, girls who are getting married younger, maybe she'd been through her whole life, right? But she's still, let's say, 18, 19 years old. Here I am, 27. And I mean, heck, I can't even tolerate 18-year-olds now. I'm 25. So
I was looking for an 18-year-old girl.
Well, what I'm saying is, it's going to be like, unless you're looking for a divorcee or perhaps a girl who is a Hoza Shuva or a Baal Shuva or something like that.
There are a lot of single girls. I got hundreds every age. You go from 18 through 42, from birth. Sure. Yeah.
Now, doesn't that indicate that maybe there's something wrong with them?
Yeah, I was going to say, maybe it was very picky and you're the knight.
Maybe they have to
go up to the tower and rescue her.
And they're still single. I'm not sure how religious they really want to be.
I would just say that not. I don't agree with you.
Chances are, if you're 28 in the Orthodox community and you're not married, something went a little awry then.
So you have to ask him what he meant. I don't view things that way. But I don't want to disagree with him. Ask him. I don't know what he meant. I don't know. I don't view it that way. It could be a factor of many things. Could be a product of many factors that a person will be 28 or 32 and still single. There could be all kinds of different causes. Sometimes it's just a question that a girl never heard a good class on dating. I've set up quite a few couples that hit the point of engagement, and I have couples who were engaged and broke the engagement, and they regret it. And that doesn't mean they were wrong in breaking the engagement. They might have been right. And it has happened numerous times, and we've seen that many of the times it was a product of misguidance. That's why one of the questions I'll ask a person before I agree to set them up is, who do you take counsel with? Do you have someone who you consult with? Because very often we've had boys and girls, and not one and not two, but tens, who hit the point, they were ready, and they found someone who they thought made sense, and they pulled out simply because they had... that mishigas, that stupidities that other people put in their heads. Be it the guy who I told you about last week, right? I told you about this. No, I didn't tell you guys. It was a different group. There was a guy who was ready to propose to a girl, and his parents told him, she doesn't have good enough looks for you. True story. So he pulled out. The guy left the country, left Israel, because his parents told him she doesn't have good enough looks for him. Today they're happily married. But can you imagine that? He called you up. He said, what do you think? He said, I think you're stupid. What do you... Your parents have to approve her looks? You... But that's a true story. So we've seen many, many things. So I wouldn't say that, no. And people, when a person's fresh into it, and a person's young, and if they don't have someone who they could talk to, so people make mistakes. That I don't think that the fact that a person's hit a certain age and they're still single is indicative of anything. It's indicative that they haven't yet gotten married, that's all. That doesn't mean you shouldn't check them out. Check and see, but if everything seems right, I don't think so. Sometimes the person is very choosy, and you'll see that when you date them, that the person is very picky, but sometimes it's not that way. Sometimes it's that she hasn't been set up. And if I told you that I have girls who go 3 years at a time without having a single date, no one sets them up, so now it's their fault that they went from 26 to 29 and they're not married? There's a girl in this community that lives right near the yeshiva. Her parents are very old. They don't know how to do anything in this matter. Someone asked me to set her up. Unfortunately, I don't have any guys for her, but she's... I don't have guys that match what she needs. But I know that in the last 3 years, she hasn't gone on a single date. So she went from 21 to 24. Today she's either 24 or 25 without a single date. Now what are you going to say? She was too picky? Tell you, a girl that lives within 5 minutes from here. I wouldn't say that, no. But maybe Rav Cohen means something else. I don't know. Yeah.
Rabbi, there's something increasing. I saw when guys is getting on a date and they start to think about getting in marriage. And I hear a lot of rabbis, they ask them, how is your spiritual life? Because I see that this is a very important thing. For getting married in the end. Because I see with my friend, he's now getting engaged and he's Chazon of Ben Tshuva, and this is one of the things the rabbis are asking. How do you pray? How do you keep Shabbat? How do you keep all the mitzvot? Because he said to me, this is the most important thing.
Okay, mm-hmm. Bar.
So I think there's a lot of times there's a severe misconception which is going on, unfortunately. I think that a lot of times people need to understand that the biggest thing that in reality is worked on taking away all the shomer mitzvot is the level of midot, you know, making them more simple and maturity. And a lot of times people think that the amount of gemara that they learn is really what's most important. I think it's a severe misconception a lot of times. I see a lot of people out there who are going out there dating and such, and they're extremely well learned, but yet their level of maturity is off, and the level of midot is not where it should be, because in the end, it's you and a woman building a life together, and this is somebody you're spending all your time with. And this is something that people need to work on. People, unfortunately, are not working on their patience or working on... There's a lot of midot issues. I mean, people have to understand that a woman is a different creature than a man, and there's certain ways that you have to treat that.
If you've been cooped up in a yeshiva your whole life, you don't have much real-world experience.
Yeah, but then it's your problem. It's the world outside.
What I'm saying is, like, then all of a sudden you're sprung on the world. Sprung on the world, you could. It's a serious epidemic. I really believe this.
Okay, so let's see. tzar.
The same thing, though.
But I don't necessarily even mean just in terms of lit. I mean, like, you know, you're just like, you know, so you see some, like, some maybe naive Jewish guy, you know, walking around Brooklyn or something, he goes in the wrong neighborhood, he doesn't know what the heck he's doing.
David, you want to say something? Okay.
What do you have to say to that?
I'm a little bit stuck because I'm being pulled in every direction. Meaning, when we started our class last week and spoke about midot, the guys said they wanted to talk about dating, and now we're talking about dating, so guys are asking me about midot.
Yeah, but I was looking for this. Is all
well, questions and focus more on the listeners.
Right. So maybe let's move forward. I think that midot is key. And we will Bezat Shem get to midot as we progress. Yeah, or I definitely agree with what you said that midot is key. You build your house with midot, and Chazal tell us that when Avram sent out his servant Eliezer to home territory to find the girl, and this goes to I don't remember who asked. I think Yosef asked this. As far as what you look for, so Chazal tell us he sent to his home territory because he knew he'd find the midot, the kindness, the willingness, and the desire to help in his home territory, which is the midah that's key for a wife in building a home. And here you have an answer to one of the questions. Lev tov, the desire to be a help, the desire to be a partner in life, a good heart, that's the midah that encompasses all other midot. And that is the midah with which one can build a home with one's wife. We will discuss other midot as we move forward, but for sure the midot are key. So if we're going to discuss equilibrium, maybe we should take what Baruch mentioned and take that point as well. Equilibrium in midot. If a person knows that his anger has really taken charge of him, or a person knows that he couldn't control his mouth, and a person's been working on certain midot over the last period of time in that area as well, a person has to give himself time to grow. And we have to remember that right now getting married seems to be like it's burning under our feet. We got to move forward on it. That's true. We reach a point where we do have to move forward on it. On the other hand, guys sometimes ask me what's going to be if I don't start dating now. So I tell them, you tell me, what's going to be if you don't start dating now? So he says, well, then I won't get married now, and I'll continue learning for another half a year. So I say, okay, and if you continue learning in another half a year, where do you foresee yourself landing in a half a year from now? So he says, well, by then I'll have a better handle on learning Gemara, by then I'll have a better picture of what Judaism is about and what living a Jewish life is about. I say, okay, and what type of girl do you think would match for you today, or would agree to marry you today? And what type of girl do you think would match for you a half a year from now? When you'll be at that place a half a year from now? Don't you think you should let yourself realize your potential before you look for the girl? When you realize your potential, you're going to be marrying a different person because you'll be a different person. So the guy inevitably says, oh, that was the next point. Thank you, Yehuda. The guy inevitably says, but you'll tell me that in 6 months from now too. To an extent, that might be true, but we have to recognize that there are marked differences. Just like there's a difference between someone who's Shomer Shabbos and someone who isn't, there's also a difference between someone who knows how to learn Talmud or someone who has an understanding of the Jewish calendar. Or there are points, there are markers, which are it's just a marked difference between someone who has this and doesn't have this. A person that never experienced a Rosh Hashanah and a Yom Kippur and a yeshiva, well, you shouldn't be dating yet. If you've never davened in a yeshiva a full year, a yeshiva or an Orthodox shul, you have a concept of what a full year of living an Orthodox life is, so hold your horses, wait a second. Now, again, these are generalizations, which automatically means they're not whole truths. Because sometimes a guy comes and tells me, well, 3 months from now I'm going to the army, I'm going to serve for the next 5 years in Afghanistan, the American Army? Yeah, the American Army. And it's now or never. I could date now, and then maybe I'll get married and I'll stay in Israel. And then maybe I'll continue growing here. So then maybe the answer is going to be different. sometimes a person has decided that he's reached his apex. He ain't growing from here. Rabbi, either I start dating now or in 2 months I'm going to be out with a job. This is as much learning as I'm going to get done in my life. Well, okay, if you've decided that this is the high of your life, you're not going to move forward from here. This is where you're going to stop your growth and your learning. I'm sorry to hear that. We should definitely continue growing throughout our lives, but at the same time, and maybe the answer for you is different. But so long as a person is considering continuing to grow, so then he has to think about which are the points that he should cross, which are the important markers that once you've crossed them, you're going to be in a totally different ballpark. It's not a question of hitting a first base or a second base. It's a question of just a different league. And that's the difference, Yehuda. Meaning, it's very tempting to say, well, in 6 months you'll tell me the same thing. Possibly, but probably not. But at least give yourself those 6 months. You've lost nothing. Let's say in 6 months you could decide, wait a second, how far have I advanced? Where am I going to be in 6 months? Does it make sense? You're right. There have been students here at Mechon Meir. There's a student now who's starting to date. He's not with us. He hasn't been with us the last year. But I remember when he came to me 2 years ago, and he asked, should I start dating? And I asked him these questions, and he said, no, he's in 6 months, he'll be in a totally different place. So we agreed he'd wait 6 months. He finished the 6 months. He came back and asked, should he start dating? So I said, look, you're at a different place now. It's your call. And he was just starting Gemara learning then. So we thought it through together, and it's true. After the first 6 months, he did decide to wait another 6 months. And then he went to a different yeshiva, and over there he saw that he's going to grow completely differently. And he grew for another year, and now he's starting to date, and he's at a different place. So he grew 2 years, he's older, he's now in his late 20s, and then he was in his mid-20s. So what? But you know what? His whole life is going to be different. You don't get married for a day, you get married for life. So yeah, he chose after 6 months to wait another 6 months, and after a year, he chose to wait another year, and I think he's very happy about that decision.
Probably I have a question. Let's say, like, for example, a guy who was studying in yeshiva finishes his conversion and he goes out of the yeshiva and he goes and works. And he met a friend, his future wife, his girlfriend through friends. Is there something wrong with it, or does it have to be a shidduch or this?
So we'll discuss the details of that. There's not Shem in a few classes. We'll get to that. What's the modest way of meeting someone? There's not Shem. We'll discuss it. Okay. So we've discussed short, about dating out of equilibrium, and maybe we should begin discussing a little bit about midot, what Baruch pointed out,
please.
And then. We'll do a little bit of Pirkei Avot because we're almost out of time. I want us to discuss something positive. I mean, we discussed something negative last class. We discussed that anger. So I want us to think about something positive. And one of the positive traits that Chazal teach us is Ein Tova, a good eye. I'm happy when someone else has something. Now, that's a difficult trait, but it's something we should think about. And I want us to leave class with some homework. Let's think for a minute how we could be happy when someone else has it good. It can stem from that I care for the other person, I'm happy for the other person. How do we work on developing that, being happy for someone else? Our nature is that We think only about ourselves. We're only happy when we have something. So now we're trying to overcome that nature. We want to be happy when someone else has it good. And this is obviously something that's very important within marriage as well. Unfortunately, within marriage, there does often creep in competition. And one of the ways to overcome that is by really being happy when someone else has it good. So let's go around the room and every person think for a minute. How do we do that? How can I be happy when someone else has it good? When someone else made $1 million? When someone else got a new car, got a new job, got engaged, is getting married? Yeah, Baruch.
Especially inside of the Jewish community, we're all sort of linked together, as they say, as like one people and such. For me personally, I feel like somebody has to be on the level of being okay with themselves before one can be happy with others. With myself, when I see other people happy today, I'm extremely happy for them because they're benefiting themselves. Like when I go out and I try to help other people, I try to explain to people, I'm not reaping any benefits off of you becoming happy. Like I'm not, you know what I'm saying? Nothing's happening except that I got to help another Jew and that you're happy. Like it's a very good trait because there's a phrase back in the land called a hater. Right? A hater is somebody who just hates on people. More well known, I guess, in the black community. So it's a phrase of somebody. When somebody is successful, they want to drag that person down. Why? Because that person's not in a good place. When someone's in a good place, they should feel love and empathy for other people. I mean, it's just an innate quality. I think people will get.
I hear. So I think there's some truth to that, but I think there's also truth the other way. You could have a person who has everything, but he spends his life being very upset that other people have. I've known people like that. Okay. So the question is, how do we build the other way? Yeah, you the.
I think emotions in general are contagious. So when people are laughing, someone's walking around like in a terrible mood, or it spreads. So if someone's a lot of good fortune and they're happy about it, like that kind of builds momentum for you, for everyone else. That's good to hang around people.
So that's one of the points I wanted us to discuss. What Baruch said was one, what you said is another. So Baruch said a person has to try to reach a certain equilibrium, to be at peace with themselves. And that's key to all midot. What you're saying is another important point, which is when we hang around people who have good midot, then it rubs off on us. We affect the people around us. It goes in both directions. A person should always try to have a roommate with good midot. I always try to have chavutot who I could learn from their midot. Because the best way to learn from to learn a good midah is by seeing someone who has it. And then, let's take it one more step. What it says in the Sfarim is that a person has to make believe he has the midah. Meaning behave as though you have it, even though you don't. But behave as though you do and you will. One of the ways to acquire a midah is to behave as though I have that midah. So if I don't have patience, my 2-year-old has been keeping me up till 3 in the morning, and then at 5 in the morning my 3-year-old walked in and said, Abba, I'm thirsty, and I remember I offered her a drink before she went to sleep at 9, and I'm ready to say, well, go to sleep, you're not getting a drink right now. So what's a good way to develop patience? By acting as though I have it. I don't have it.
Or then you could just always, like, maybe everyone who seems
just
to
wait
have
just
it,
a second,
just
Yosef. Yosef, yeah.
Think about the whole, like, seeing the laurels of people's successes. Like, I don't know, reading the Facebook news feed is not good for it. It's like, oh, they got married. Oh, great. And I'm still single. Oh, look at that. They just got a master's degree from someplace. Oh, look, they're a doctor now. What am I doing now? Why did I friend these people? Well, you're constantly reminded of that. Like,
you don't finish the book and see how, like,
What do we do? It's like now in our generation with our, the information age and everyone's consuming email and, singing the laurel of their own praises, what should you do? I mean, I don't want to feel jealous, but on the other hand, it's like that person, like, you knew they cheated all the way through to get through something sometimes. And so you're like, should I say, hey, mazel tov, great, wonderful, or should I just, not even think about it outside online?
So let's go back to what Baruch said, and let's see how we could take the Mishnah we learned in Pirkei Avos and apply it here. Natan, is it relevant to this?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, I'm with you.
One great way for me that I find is that benefits me is that it every time that I hear about someone else's success, it serves as an opportunity for me to gauge how far I've grown my own. Because it's always an issue of jealousy and say, well, okay, this person just told me something. How did I react to it? Am I genuinely happy for this person, or do I need to keep on working some more? So that's for me. Every time, if you put in a situation where maybe someone says, "Oh, I bringing this work for me, or this person, you know, different opportunities that go to the FDA. Where am I? It's kind of like a little way to gauge myself and where I need to go, where I am, and so that's why I think it's a great thing.
Sure. Yeah.
Is it not that one should be happy with what you have, and then to be happy for other people on the same level? Listen, this guy has a nice car, so it's not a small car, but the car brings me to the same place.
Oh.
You must be happy for what you are, and maybe this guy is just a little more clever than you, but you have to accept it, your level.
Oh, so that's where I want to go, exactly what you're saying. Chazal say, Ezu Ashir, who is wealthy, Hasamech Bechalko, someone who's happy with his lot. Now, how could I be happy with my lot? So, in our Binyan Abayit class last week, we discussed that he who gets angry, it's like he serves idols. So I got a very interesting email. We were supposed to dedicate the Shir tonight to someone in that email, and I forgot. So I'll dedicate the remainder of our learning. I don't remember the person's name right now, but the Refu Shalema to the person who was supposed to learn for it. Hashem knows who it is. We'll get the name Yitzchem for tomorrow's learning or the learning later in the week. So someone wrote, they quoted from a sefer, that why am I jealous and why do I anger? I'm jealous because I think I have X and they have Y. Why don't I have Y? I want Y. I would like to have Y. Ah! I'm jealous. Why am I jealous? Because I think that if only I could, I'd really take Y from them and I'd have Y. I'm very sad that they have Y and I only have X. So you realize that this whole conversation takes God out of the picture. Because the second God enters the picture, I recognize God gave me X and gave him Y. Then obviously I need X and he needs Y. So he got what's good for him and I got what's good for me. And I'm not lacking one iota from what I need because God gave me exactly what I need. So they wrote, I don't know where they quoted this thought from, they still owe me a source, but I think it's a very nice thought, that's why Chazal say, he who angers, it's as though they serve idols. Because at the moment that I anger, it's like, how dare you say that to me? To me, notice the capital me, I, right? But if I think for a minute and I realize, wait a second, I'm getting exactly what I deserve at every moment, so then my whole issue is between me, myself, and God. Right? Or God, me, and myself. Let's put in proper order. But the real issue revolves around me, not around God. So let's go one step at a time. Number one, we'll go with what Baruch said and Francois developed, that Ezu Asher Samech Bechelko, being happy with one's lot. Let's develop that one more step. Ein Tova, good eye, doesn't only mean what I see he has. Ein Tova also means what I have. People could have all the wealth in the world and they don't appreciate it. One of the greatest gifts that a person can have is appreciation. I sometimes stop and ask myself, is it a dream? I'm walking the streets of Jerusalem. My great-grandparents and generations were dreaming about this and I'm living the dream. I'm here, we're here, we're breathing the air, we walk to the coattail. I kick myself because I forget. The first year I was in Israel, every morning I'd wake up, look out the window, and say, I can't believe it, I'm here, I can't believe it, I'm here. And now, 11, 12 years have passed, and I don't do that every morning. I wake up and I'm rushing to do a lot of other things. And I used to walk out of the house, when we first got married, we lived next to an elementary school. So I'd try to time the time I left the house so that I'd see the children walking to school. Because I felt I was seeing the fulfillment of the prophet Zechariah. He says, you'll still see the streets of Jerusalem with little boys and girls talking Hebrew, singing, going. I'm hearing little kids talking Hebrew. I just get excited. When did we have a generation that little children were walking to school talking Hebrew? It would just excite me to see that. Today, I walk in the streets, I'm talking Hebrew, they're talking Hebrew. We forget it. So part of having a good eye and part of reaching being Samech Bechelko is recognizing what is my chelek, what do I have? And maybe we'll conclude with a story that we mentioned before. There was once a girl, 19, 20, good-looking girl, who the doctor saw that she had a growth in her leg, and the only solution was to amputate the leg. So they amputated the leg, and the doctor amputated the leg after the amputation. He figured he'll come, we'll talk to the girl, and we'll see what psychological help she'll need and how they could help her. So he comes to the room, and he sees her by her bed, standing on one leg. That's all she has. And he comes in, and she thanks him for the operation, and he tries talking to her, and she sees she seems relatively cheery. So he asks her, is everything okay? Are you playing a game? She says, yeah, everything's okay. So he says, well, you seem cheery. She says, doctor, let me explain to you this way. Imagine I had billions of dollars and I lost a million. It's a loss. I still got my other billions. She says, I still have hands, I still have eyes, I still have ears, I still have so many millions. I lost a million. Believe me, that leg was precious. It wasn't nothing. But I have to have perspective. I still have my millions. So it's a question of perspective. There was once an older person who they were one of a few siblings. Every other sibling had millions, if not billions, in the bank. And that grandparent had didn't have millions in the bank. So that grandparent once told me, they said to me, they have their billions in the bank and I have my billions in the home. That grandparent was referring to their children and their grandchildren. It's perspective. I've seen millionaires who are very upset because their neighbor has another Rolls Royce, one more than them. There's a story of Mordechai Eliyahu. Once I went to visit a millionaire, and he walks in and the man is standing staring out of the window. So Rav Mordechai Eliyahu asks him, what's wrong? He says, look at that. So he says, what? So he says, look. So he sees a car. So he says, what? So he says, my neighbor has the newest edition of... The man has his millions, but he's looking out the window at his neighbor's car, and he's upset that he doesn't have it. It's perspective. A lot of life is a question of perspective. Whether we're happy or we're sad, to a great extent, depends on our perspective. And so, the thing that I want us to work on this week, and me included, let's take this week till next time we meet, and think about this point. How can I be happy? And we said, one, with my own lot, two, with what my friend has, and look positively at what someone else has. And let's think of ways to get there. And Be'ezrat Hashem, next week we'll start with that. Our class went really over time. I wanted to end 35 minutes ago and do some Pirkei Avos. But okay, yeah.